When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, August 19th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the biggest box office stories from this past weekend. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, I actually want to kick things off with a couple of listener emails. So Ross W. from Ontario, California, wrote in last week and he said, "Hey, Ben, while I enjoyed you and Ryan talking about the video game movies last Thursday, the one movie that I was shouting at my car speakers, not really, that you missed was Tron. I saw it in the theaters when it first came out. I'm old and I've loved it ever since. Jeff Bridges and David Warner are great in it. And those very early computer graphics still look amazing. Other than that, you guys did a great job. King of Kong is fantastic. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work." So thank you to Ross for writing that in. That was in response to the video game episode that we did right before Borderlands came out. I think that was two Thursdays ago by now. So you can go back and listen to that episode if you haven't yet. Ryan, I wanted to ask you, I think we've talked a little bit about Tron on this podcast when we talked about some casting news and stuff like that. But remind me what your thoughts are on the original Tron.
I definitely respect the original Tron more than I do like it. I think it's one of those movies that you probably would have had to see when it came out to really have any sort of meaningful connection with. Because I do think it's one of those things where there are plenty of older movies that hold up incredibly well. And I say that as someone who watches something like, you know, Double Indemnity that, you know, was decades before my time. You know, and can totally, and I know that's not like an effects driven movie or whatever, or like even the original Godzilla for me, maybe a better example of an effects driven movie that I think still holds up. But yeah, I think Tron, by my read, doesn't necessarily hold up to modern scrutiny super well, but it is something I can look at and sort of respect for its time or whatever. But I don't have much of a personal connection to the film itself, if that makes
sense. I'm pretty much right there with you. I do think David Warner is awesome. Like, that guy just ruled in pretty much everything he was in. So anytime I saw him on screen, I was like, oh man, I'm in for it now. This is great, because I just loved it, really, the experience of watching him on screen. But yeah, I think this movie came out way before my time as well, or I was very young. I don't remember actually what year the first Tron came out, but I think it was just before I was born. So I didn't see it until much later in life. And Ross says that the very early computer graphics still look amazing. I mean, they look distinctive, I'll give him that. I'm not really sure if amazing in the modern context still holds up, but I appreciate the passion for this franchise. And as I mentioned on the D23 episode that I did with Jacob, like, just the idea that this, I think that was the episode that I was talking about this on, like, just the idea that Tron is like one of the most unlikely franchises that is in existence, right? Like, it's just so strange that this one-off movie produced a sequel decades later and then another sequel decades after that. It's just, or a decade plus after that. It's just, kind of wild to think about. So thanks for writing in and for listening, Ross. We really appreciate that. Ryan, I was really excited to get this next email from Brandon from Knoxville, Tennessee. He says, "Ben and Ryan, I'm a film buyer at Regal who also oversees Indian and South Asian releases for our theater network."
Hey, hey.
Yeah. Brandon says, "I'm pleased to hear you acknowledge Indian films occasionally sneak into the box office top 10 over the past handful of weeks on your July 29th episode. For the past few years, especially since the smash success of RRR in early 2022, interest from North American audiences in Indian and South Asian titles has steadily grown. Over 4 million people of South Asian descent call the United States home, and they have established a large and dedicated audience for Indian releases. India produces more films by volume than Hollywood, with the main four languages of Hindi, Tamil, Telugu, and Punjabi featuring in the majority of releases. The most highly anticipated movies also come to American theaters around major Indian holidays and festivals. Several titles are coming to theaters to mark India Independence Day on August 15th, which was a few days ago by now. And multiple films could land in the domestic box office top 10. Dasara on October 12th, Diwali on November 1st, and Christmas should also see plenty of Indian movies at American cinemas, with films featuring the most popular South Asian actors in some of 2024's most notable releases. I'm looking forward to hearing more of your commentary on the Indian film industry in future podcasts. So, yeah, thank you, Brandon, for writing in. I know we were like sort of expressing some puzzlement, Ryan, you and I, about like what's going on here, and that sort of at least tries to answer a little bit or shine some more light on some context for why that's happening. So I don't know if you have any response to this, Ryan.
Well, I do think it's cool and it's nice to hear the insight. And, you know, I love hearing from just like, you know, listeners and stuff and getting perspective. But I think like sometimes you and I have knowledge gaps that we just can't fill in ourselves. So like when our listeners are like connected enough to be able to give us some insight, I think that's like fantastic. And yeah, we so will cool. be talking about one of these Indian films in just a second as it compares to a movie that might be bombing its way into the record books, not to get too ahead of ourselves here. But
okay. Yeah, that's a good tease. So thank you again, Brandon, for writing in. And if anybody else has, you know, in the industry has any response to anything that we say where you can provide some insight like that or some commentary or push back on anything that we say, feel free to do it. My inbox is always open. I'll give you the email address at the very end of today's show.
Or feel free, like I'm on Twitter and I'm not one of those people where like, if you have information that makes me incorrect, I'm happy to like, I like to set the record straight when and where I can. So please, by all means, like let me know.
Yes, 100%. Okay. Actually, let's take a quick break, Ryan, and then we'll get into the main thrust of today's episode.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.
All right, let's get into it. Why don't you run through the top 10 at the box office for me before we get started?
Yeah, we'll do. And this is, I'm going to say, this is an interesting top 10. And the one thing I'm going to mention right up top is the 9 and 10 spots for this weekend are just ever so slightly in contention. Right. We have the 9 and 10 spots flip-flop, depending on whether you're looking at Box Office Mojo or the numbers. I'm going to go with Box Office Mojo for our purposes for today, but the sheer number amount doesn't change that much, but I just wanted to have that note before I read off these numbers. Anyway, okay. Alien Romulus, the latest installment in the Alien franchise, topped the charts with $41.5 million domestically. We'll talk more about this in a minute, but now, fascinating to note, Disney has topped the box office for the last 4 weekends with an R-rated movie. What a time to be alive. speaking of those R-rated movies, Deadpool and Wolverine finally had to surrender to the top spot, but it came in at number 2 with another $29 million. Dropped just 46%. These are all estimates, by the way. The final numbers have not come in as of recording time, but anyway. Number 3, It Ends With Us, again, holding incredibly strong against a big competition. Another $24 million, dropped 52%. We probably won't talk about this one a lot more for the rest of today, but it has made $97.7 million domestically, $82.2 million internationally, basically at $180 million worldwide. It will easily cross $200 million in the next few days against a $25 million budget. Holy crap, does Sony have a hit on their hands with this one? At number four, Twister's still holding strong domestically with $9.8 million in its fifth weekend. Still struggling overseas quite a bit, though, so we'll see what happens with that one. The biggest surprise of the weekend, perhaps, Coraline, for its 15th anniversary, made $8.3 million over the weekend and $11.3 million over a four-day stretch through Fathom Events. It now sets a record for Fathom Events for a re-release. The previous record holder, last year's re-release of Coraline, which did a little over $7 million. So people love Coraline. Yeah, pretty wild stuff. We can talk about that a little more if you want. At number six, we have Despicable Me 4. With $6 million, that is holding incredibly well, $340 million domestically, coming in on up on $850 worldwide, I believe. At number seven, we have Trap, M. Night Shyamalan's latest, with $3.4 million, holding decently well week to week, actually, even though it lost a bunch of theaters this weekend. It is now at $35 million domestic, $62 million worldwide, and has officially passed Knock at the Cabin. So, you know, even though that didn't start super strong, it's holding pretty well. Number eight, we have Inside Out 2 with another $3.2 million. It's slowing down, but it is at $1.62 billion worldwide. If it gets some sort of re-release at something, it might be able to overtake the Lion King remake. And then at number nine, we have one of those Indian movies we were talking about called Stree 2. This is apparently from some universe of films in India I'm not super familiar with, but it did quite well for itself with $2.5 million in 666 theaters, so it had a really good per-screen average. And then at number 10, we had Borderlands crashing and burning in its second weekend with just $2.35 million, dropped 73% and made only $752 per screen this weekend. We will talk a little bit more about this in a minute, but this is in getting into historically bad territory.
Yeah. Okay, so before we get into that, I am really interested in this Coraline thing because I completely forgot that Coraline was re-released last year. Yep. And so when you said that it did so well, I was like, man, there must have just been like a lot of pent-up interest in seeing this movie back on the big screen again. But people had that opportunity last year. So think that like this means that Coraline 2 is being talked about and is like almost inevitable at this point if this movie continues to make this much money in theaters?
I don't necessarily think that. One, because it's, you know, based on some source material by Neil Gaiman. There are several reasons why that might be a problem now. For one, Gaiman might not want to do a sequel to something that doesn't necessarily have source material connected to it. Second of all, I only bring it up because it is somewhat relevant that there are some accusations floating around about Gaiman right now that you
yes
can
oh my god I can't believe I forgot about that yeah
no it's not a yeah. problem but I'm just saying but it is relevant to the conversation because this movie has yep. very much found an audience so I don't know also I think it would be much more expensive to make a movie like this now what's fascinating to look at here is this only played in 1535 screens so that per screen average we talked about a couple of weeks ago $5,466 per screen. That is a stellar per screen average, particularly for a re-release. So, you know, theaters were thrilled with this. Fathom was thrilled with this. Imagine the folks at Leica were thrilled with this. Just for a little bit more context, the original Coraline opened to just a little over $16 million when it originally opened. So this re-release did like half of what it originally did, you know, wow. which is crazy. So, I mean, you know, no need to really beat this to death, but like Coraline did well enough in its day, but boy, has that movie found an audience. That's really impressed me. Again, especially to your point that like, it wasn't as though people didn't have this opportunity somewhat recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also like the idea just, I guess conceptually that people are seeing this movie and liking it so much that like maybe it's sending signs of support for potential future stop motion movies. Cause I think there was a conversation a couple years ago that like maybe these stop motion movies might be certainly on their way out, if not like dying a really slow and painful death. And like, there was all this talk about Leica being potentially entering bankruptcy and hanging on by a thread basically. So I think we've talked about this before on the podcast of like the idea of younger generations growing up with, let's say, all CG animated movies from Disney or Pixar or something like that, for example, right? And then like looking back in time at the old 2D animated stuff that we grew up on and just kind of being allergic to that as a look, as an aesthetic. And so the idea that Coraline can keep coming out and like potentially drawing enough interest and establishing itself as a recurring thing in the pop culture zeitgeist that maybe younger audiences could latch onto and find an interest in stop motion stuff. I mean, that's not really something that studios can put a dollar value on, but like maybe it could be a contributing factor to maybe stemming the bleeding a little bit of a potentially dying art form, I guess we'll put it
100%. And more than I would say a sequel to Coraline, I think it helps Laika have something to hold on to, because I think Missing Link was their last movie, if I'm not mistaken. And that did not do well at all. Like that was, you know, so I think that, you know, I think Laika's margins are pretty thin. So like if they have a flop, it's hard to, you know, it's kind of hard to sort of recover from that. But so I think that this, and I think you look at stuff like this, or you think it, you look at the legacy that, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas sort of leave behind, and some of these unique animated movies will hold on. And I think, oddly enough, I don't know if there's any correlation here, but even you look at something like Robot Chicken that's been on the air for like 20 years, mm-hmm. and the fact that that's all stop motion-y, with even though it's action figures and stuff, I do think that there is a certain group of people that look at that stuff and go, hey, this is interesting. And you know, even if 2D animation doesn't always work for them, this stuff is unique enough where they might like to see that sort of thing. So I'm with you in that. I hope that it does lead to, you know, a little bit of something for Laika if they're making a pitch for financiers, like, look, this one didn't work, but look at Coraline. And, you know, you can look at the long tail value of something like this.
And just to put a quick bow on this, I just looked this up, and Laika has a new movie that's coming to theaters on April 11th, 2025, called Wildwood, that I don't really know much about, but Travis Knight is directing it. He did Kubo and the Two Strings and a handful of other Laika films.
He did Bumblebee as well.
Bumblebee. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's got a great cast. Richard E. Grant, Maya Erskine, Jemaine Clement, Amanda Stenberg, Charlie Day, Jake Johnson, Angela Bassett, Awkwafina, Mahershala Ali, Carey Mulligan.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So big, big names there. So stay tuned. If you're a fan of these stop motion movies, keep an eye out for Wildwood early next year. So,
well, I'd be very curious to see what that does now in light of some of this Coraline reevaluation. But should we go from the top down here, I guess?
Yes, definitely.
Talk a little bit about Alien Romulus?
Absolutely.
I know you probably already talked about this on the show. Have you seen it, Ben?
Yes, we talked about it on Friday. And I'm curious what you made of it.
Without getting into spoilers, I echo what many people have said, in that it's kind of a greatest hits movie until it isn't. And I don't think there's any problem with that at all. I think that all sort of depends on execution. And I think Fede Alvarez is nothing if not a man who knows how to execute certain things, and this is what he does well. So as a big fan of these movies, I liked it. I'd rank it middle of the pack, but there ain't nothing wrong with that when, you know, some of your competition is Alien and Aliens. So I quite liked it. And I know the third act, you and I talked a little bit about this on Friday, I believe, just privately, but, you know, not going to work for everybody, but I respect the big swing, and I quite liked it. So,
I do too. Even though, like, the design, I'll leave it as vague as that. But the design didn't necessarily work for me. But I absolutely appreciated the ballsiness to really go for it in a big way. And I feel like that about the movie overall. Like, there are several little things that kind of bug me a little bit, but not enough to really damper my appreciation of the movie as a whole. So
the only reason I bring it up before talking about the financials here is that I actually had a couple friends reach out to me and were like, hey, this just looks like a standard Alien movie, like, should I go see this? Does it look like more than that? And I had to kind of explain to them, like, a lot of it is that until it isn't. So definitely, like, you know, I respect that, you know, Fede definitely didn't just go the easiest route with it. So, you know, I will say, yes, there are parts of it that are that, but if anyone who's kind of on the fence, you know, just know that there's some new stuff in there for you. But anyway, the sales pitch of selling this movie as a sort of back to basics horror focused alien film certainly worked. So $41.5 million domestic. Alien Romulus did $66.7 million overseas. Again, this is all estimated. These numbers could change slightly, but this is more or less what we're looking at. $108 million global debut. It is the second biggest domestic opening for an Alien film, second only to Prometheus, which did $51 million back in 2012. And, you know, that was a much bigger deal. It had a much, like, it had an A-list cast. Like, it had Charlize Theron kind of at arguably maybe like the peak of her career. And it had, you know, Ridley Scott coming back. And so there was all this stuff. Whereas here you don't have any of that. You have a mostly no-name up-and-coming cast. Like, all due respect, I loved the cast, but they're not, like, this was an opportunity for them, not so much like a, hey, here are big names thing. Right. So they were able to sell it effectively using the Alien name. You know, and again, even all due respect to Fede Alvarez, he is not Ridley Scott. You know, like, you're not, the names don't get you there. The Alien is what gets you there. And they effectively sold that. And, you know, so $80 million budget. So this is already well on its way to profitability. And a B-plus cinema score, which is better than both Prometheus and Covenant, which had a B cinema score. That plus does make a difference. And in the 80s for both critics and audiences on Rotten Tomatoes, which is third only to Alien and Aliens on the tomato meter. So every indication is that, you know, this will hold pretty well. And yeah, I mean, it's a good result. It's a very good result, actually. So, you know, I mean, that it's early, but I mean, this is good stuff. You know, and for all of the sort of hand wringing about, you know, Disney's gonna, you know, water down these Fox franchises. Well, we've now had Alien Romulus. We've had Deadpool and Wolverine. We've had Prey. We've had Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. We've had the First Omen. You make it a lot of arguments that they're 5 for 5 there. So
yeah, that's a great point. And I would say that none of those movies feel particularly compromised either. Like, maybe a little bit here and there, but not any more so than they would have been under any other studio, I think. I mean, that's just my read on it. But
I mean, that look, as a huge fan of, you know, particularly the Apes movies, and I love the Deadpool movies, and I'll say this, just like, I can only give my own perspective, but let's rattle. I haven't seen The First Omen, but Prey, I would argue, is the second best Predator movie, and maybe only is in second place because the first one has the legacy to take it to the number one spot. Prey is phenomenal. Alien Romulus is, at worst, a middle of the pack Alien movie, which still makes it pretty good, and I quite enjoyed it. Deadpool and Wolverine straight up reignited my love for the Marvel stuff. Even if I acknowledge it is not a perfect movie, it really got me. And I think Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is right in line with that Matt Reeves trilogy as being just like as good as those other movies have been. So, you know, when you say being uncompromised, I'd say, yeah, more or less within the studio system. Just one man's opinion.
I can't wait until you see The First Omen. Ryan, you got to catch up with that because that movie has some absolutely bonker stuff in it.
And that's what I've heard. Yeah. So, like, I would say they're right, and I can't wait. I just haven't had time. But, like, you know, 5 for 5. And so, like, I'm not saying that, you know, there are still issues there where Disney, you know, Fox put out a lot of original live-action stuff, and that Disney hasn't done that as much with Fox, and a lot of that stuff's gone to Hulu. So, you know, I'm not sitting here, like, you know, praising Disney beyond reason. I'm just saying that with the franchise stuff, they, you know, for the concern of watering it down, they sure as hell haven't.
Yeah, given the cards that we've been dealt, this seems like a pretty okay outcome so far.
So I'd say so. And then the only other thing, you know, and this is a drum I've beat a lot, but this is one of the better examples of, you know, this reasoning, is that this movie was originally supposed to go to Hulu. And I just can't get over that in light of what we're looking at right here, that, you know, thankfully the powers that be decided, yeah, let's not do that, because this thing looked cinematic to me. It didn't look like something you had to suddenly try to get ready for theaters. And $80 million is an awful lot of money to spend on something that you're just going to put on Hulu. It's a lot less to spend.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We were looking at this the editors were trying to figure out exactly the timing on this. And I found an article from Hollywood Reporter that said that Alvarez was doing an interview, and he basically said, like, as production was beginning, that's when the folks at Disney came to him and said, this is no longer going to be a straight to Hulu thing. So my impression from some of the reporting and stuff that I'd read was they made that decision after the movie was already done. But just to sort of clarify the timeline in case people are curious about that, it sounds like almost like day one of filming, they were like, all right, we're making this movie for theaters, and it kind of gave the crew a boost, and everybody knew, okay, we're like playing for the big leagues here. So
that's fantastic. I did not know that. That's fantastic. But yeah, but what I guess what I'm saying is, when it was announced, it was the idea is do this like Prey. And
yes,
I've talked about this a bunch on this podcast, but I've got to imagine, like, privately, there are a bunch of people at Disney that go, I know Prey would have had to go to Max if we had put it in theaters, but holy crap, should we have put that in theaters? Mm-hmm. Like, I still think in light of, I don't think Prey would have opened as big as Romulus, but I think Prey would have had better word of mouth than Romulus. So I think Prey could have, you know, but anyway, I don't have a lot else to say about this right now. Other than that, I think we're definitely probably going to get another Alien movie at some point. I think the next Predator movie, which is titled Badlands, is, I would bet every single dollar that I have and maybe even take out a loan to get more money to put on the table that one will go to theaters as well. in light of what happened here. I don't know if you have any other thoughts or questions, but I just think it's good. That's all. That's pretty much what I come out at.
No, that's great. So I guess let's swing all the way to the opposite end of the spectrum. Let's talk about Borderlands for a second, and then maybe we'll wrap up with anything in between. But we got to talk about Borderlands because, as you mentioned, this is becoming this is almost entering legendary territory here, and not in a good way, unfortunately.
I'm confident in saying that it is. And look, you know, and I hope listeners know that, I'm not one to beat up on something unnecessarily. I tend to like to be positive, and Ben, maybe you can attest to this. If there's a negative thing pitched my way, I will do anything to push against that if I can. It's not my way. It's not what I do. There is no getting around this. Borderlands is, I am confident in saying right now, a historic bomb at this point. We can talk about this in the breadth of Cutthroat Island and whatever other historic bomb you want to talk about. You know, maybe only The Adventures of Pluto Nash or something like that is going to be worse than this. It is that bad. So let's run over some of those numbers real quick. And Borderlands now, after two weekends in theaters, this is a movie with a $115 million production budget before marketing, mind you. $13.5 million domestic total after two weekends. $5 million internationally for an $18.5 million running cum. My understanding is that this is coming to streaming very quickly already. It will be on VOD soon. The problem is, critics and audiences almost universally agree this is a bad movie. So there might be some curiosity on VOD, but not like what you would get for a movie that people liked. Borderlands made $752 per screen this weekend. You want to guess how many of those 3,000 screens it's playing on are still going to be there next weekend if the theaters are contractually allowed to give up those screens to something else? it's not... And so the other thing that a lot of people are bringing up is that, Lionsgate, pre-sold a lot of the international rights to help cover costs. Okay, that's fine. Let's say, but what that means, if you've heard me say that on this show, and let me offer some understanding. So let's say there's a film company in Germany that says we would like to distribute Borderlands here. So Lionsgate then would sell that company the rights for a certain price. But then that means whatever distributor or local company picked it up in Germany, well, they still have to make what they paid for the rights back to make it work, make any sense for them. So there are distributors all over the world right now that are pissed at Borderlands. It's not just as simple as, Lionsgate will be fine. And they won't be. Let's be clear. I don't know how much Lionsgate is on the hook for after everything's said and done, but this movie's going to lose a fortune. It's losing a lot of money for somebody or a lot of somebody's. And I mean, $115 million budget on a movie that is going to be very lucky to clear $40 million worldwide. And I mean, very lucky. I just don't know what to say. It's abysmal.
Is kind of where you hope that Lionsgate was smart enough to put some of that John Wick money in a mattress for a rainy day. And maybe they'll be able to weather this a little bit. I'm not sure what the economics are of that company. I don't know their business strategy. I don't know any of that stuff. But I think there've been a lot of rumblings over the past several years about is Lionsgate up for sale or going to be bought by somebody or whatever. And I'm not sure how much of that is actually real talk and how much of that is just sort of whatever industry chatter, just kind of a pie in the sky thinking. Yeah. But a loss like this, whatever the final number ends up being for them, can't be good. So, if that leads to more consolidation, that's not a good thing. Despite what we were saying about Disney actually potentially going 5 for 5 with these Fox properties, that is the best case scenario of a pretty bad situation. I think people maybe forgot because Deadpool and Wolverine made so much money that this movie has been painted with the success brush, and everybody's like, oh yeah, this movie, whatever, contributed to saving theaters this summer and all this kind of stuff, which is true, right? But also, like, Deadpool should not be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, in an ideal business world, that would not have happened. Like, the idea that 20th Century Fox should still be a standalone movie studio. It should not have been gobbled up by Disney in the way it was. And so I'm just hoping that a loss like this with Borderlands doesn't mean that this is one of the last dominoes to fall before Lionsgate is eventually gobbled up by somebody else. So hopefully they'll be able to withstand this and stand strong. So
I couldn't agree more, because that, like, Lionsgate, and just to give some idea to people who might not know, like, you have the major studios, which are Disney, Universal, Paramount, Sony, and Warner Brothers. So you have the five majors that are left, right? Fox used to be one, but then Disney bought them. That's why there was a lot of, like, concern that, you know, Paramount was possibly going to merge with Sony. Like, there was at least an offer on the table. Lionsgate is what we call a mini major. But so Lionsgate is like bigger than, let's say, A24, but not as big as Universal. But they are not built to withstand gargantuan losses, at least not a lot of them. You know, Disney can sort of weather that. You know, they don't want to, but they can. So this is bad. Like, and look, Lionsgate is probably going to have all kinds of things to say about it whenever their next quarterly earnings report comes out or whatever, and they're going to try to put a nice face on it. But, you know, and like, even with the thing going back to last year, like Expendables 4, you know, that was a gargantuan flop. Now, they protected themselves, you know, by only having a small stake in it, but still, you know, your wins are slightly smaller, but, you know, so... Yeah, I'm with you. That's one of my big concerns here. But also, like, you know, again, I go back to, I just don't know how you let something like this get away from you so badly. I would implore Lionsgate to just stop with these big franchise swings. It's really never worked for them, only for sequels for movies that already did well. Just go back to the mid-budget stuff. That's where they excel. But this is bad. We'll get final numbers later in the year, but I this is a much bigger bomb than Madam Web, a much bigger bomb than anything else that's come out this year, rivaled perhaps only by Horizon. But even that, I think, has more interest from people outside of theatrical. So I don't know. It's bad stuff, and I imagine Eli Roth is rushing to get Thanksgiving 2 made, because that man is going to need some positive PR here in a hurry.
Yeah. Okay. So anything in between Alien Romulus and Borderlands that you wanted to expand on?
Just a tiny bit with Twisters, because this is becoming a very odd situation where this movie has done $238.4 million domestically. It has held incredibly well week to week, and North American audiences are really loving this movie, but it has only done $95 million internationally. It has done less than 30% of its business overseas, which is exceptionally rare in the modern era. Usually it's about a 50-50 split. A lot of times you'll see, like, overseas, you know, make up a bigger chunk, but yeah, this is exceptionally rare. And so it's at 333.4 worldwide, and against a $150 million budget, that's just not enough to get you to a sequel. But you got to wonder if Warner Brothers and Universal are looking at this like, well, you know, like, I don't know what's going to happen here, but it's just worth sort of pointing out that, like, it's doing so well here. But, you know, this is where overseas is really important still. And, you know, in some cases it can kind of make or break something. So,
Okay. Something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of it's a fascinating case this year. I can't really recall another situation quite like it, at least off the top of my head, but you know, sort of worth just pointing out. The only other thing I'd point out is we talked last week about Cuckoo, Neon's latest horror movie, kind of fell off a cliff this weekend quietly, dropped almost 72%, made less than $1 million in its second weekend, a very lousy $617 per screen average. So, you know, long legs it will not be. But that's okay. Neon didn't need that one to make a fortune to be able to do what it needed, but I just wanted to touch on that. That's all I got for you, Ben.
Cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.